When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
House of the deviled eggs.
Yeah. I just want to eat her up.
That's the
Greta Gerwig.
So, Catherine, I was just thinking about this. We have the honor of being invited to screenings of movies often, mm-hmm. and we go to get to see them for free. Do you ever? Probably not. But I'll sometimes buy tickets for screenings that I don't go to if I've seen the movie for free. I'll buy like the crappiest seats in the theater and just like because I want to support it.
I love that you do that.
Yeah.
I just try to go see films in the theaters, particularly when we have guests on the podcast. I will a lot of times you'll offer a screener, but if the film is in theaters, I will make a point. Like, and it's also been self-care for me because it's like I get to go.
Well, theaters are great.
And do what I love. You know what I mean? What I love to do. But I love that you do that.
Yeah, even with Five Nights at Freddy's, which I have no interest in the property. The movie was fine, but we watched it on Peacock. But I was like, you know, I bought two tickets for it.
I love that you do that. I think it's so. We have for anyone listening before we get started today. It's so. I don't think people realize how important it is to see films in the theater right now. It's truly the way that we can make money as creatives. Truly, in the era of streaming, it's so incredibly hard to profit on your films, which
like DVDs used to be a thing.
Yeah, those which makes cool. it really hard for us. And I know people think it's crazy, but it makes it really hard for us as working creatives to support ourselves. So the way that you can help us directly is go see your movies in the theater. And today, we are so, so lucky to be joined by someone who actually has a film that likely will have a limited theatrical run, which you should absolutely see. It's called Last Stop in Yuma County. It's amazing. Jocelyn Donahue joins us today, but she's also been in a plethora of other films. She's an incredible actress. You might know her from Dr. Sleep or Insidious. Thank you so much for being
thanks,
here.
Thanks, guys.
With us.
Hey. Such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us.
We're so excited to have you.
Me too. So excited to be here.
What we met at Barbara's house originally, but you also work with Barbara on Last Stop in Yuma County.
Yes, yeah, which has been something I've been wanting to do for a long time. So unfortunately, we don't have scenes together, but hopefully down the line we'll get to do something where we can work together. We got to make this film, first time feature director, and it's kind of hard to believe because he's super talented. I know this is going to be a big launching board for him. It's kind of this Tarantino-esque, Coen Brothers-esque, but like a lot of throwbacks, but it really also has its own unique style. He's kind of just like this chancy, like takes all these risks, cool indie film director.
What's his name?
His name's Francis Galluppi. Okay. And it's like a isolated diner in the middle of nowhere in Yuma County, and these bank robbers come in and kind of hold everybody hostage. So you know that genre, but he really does something special with it.
It felt like I was watching a Tarantino film, like an early Tarantino film. I was like, it was so character driven. It went in directions that I really did not see it going.
Exactly. It's like a really like a big ensemble cast of really colorful characters and all these really cool performances, including Barbara's, which
it
is
awesome.
It also
has Sierra McCormick, who we also had on the show. She's amazing in it.
Oh my god,
her character is so fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who else is in it? Because I remember I haven't seen the movie yet, but I remember looking at the cast and being like, oh.
The lead is Jim Cummings, the filmmaker and actor, and he's awesome in it. And Richard Brake, Nicholas Logan, they play the criminals, and they have like this dynamic that's really fun.
I want someone to cast Richard Brake in a very nice, wholesome role.
I know. I think he wants that too.
Yeah.
And he is the sweetest human being, but he's so good at playing bad guys.
This is not the movie.
Yeah.
Like every time you see him, he is just the most evil, disgusting man on screen, and he plays it so well.
And this
obviously.
Is actually the second time time I've got to work with him in that capacity. I've been at the other barrel of a gun, at the end, other end of the gun with Richard a couple times. I worked with him on Off Season, that Mickey Keating movie. But yeah, he does something, has a totally different badass character, baddie character in this one. So.
So how did you get involved in this film? It's kind of, it's a small film, first time director, right? But such a bang up cast. I mean, I people we love, including you, but like this is, it's really incredible to have a cast like this.
Yeah. I mean, Francis reached out. Like I said, I had worked with Richard and I think he was already involved. Also, the DP was the same DP, Mac Fiskin, who's so talented. He also shot Off Season. So like once you see a couple people that you know and you really appreciate and respect their work, like it makes you feel more comfortable coming onto it. And as soon as I talked to Francis, just hearing his vision for it, his passion, he's just really has this infectious kind of love of genre and had a really cool vision for this film. So it made me want to sign on.
Yeah.
And the script is really like punchy dialogue, colorful characters, really entertaining and fast paced. So I knew it was something special like from the script.
I feel like hearing you speak highly of a director means a lot because you've worked with both Mike Flanagan and Ty West, who are both just incredible directors.
Yeah, super lucky to do that. And, you know, everyone, they're all individuals with their own individual personalities, but something that they all share is like a deep passion and knowledge of the genre. They're all great leaders. And Francis also has that. Great communicators, and you really learn a lot about somebody when you're on set with them. And I know Francis is going to do really well because he's like just such a good guy, super smart, always like iterating all the way through, like from workshopping the script together and then all the way through on set, just like finding ideas and making it better always.
Yeah,
I feel like, you know, maybe it's just selection bias or just people who we know, but it's nice to know that all these brilliant directors who are working right now are really great people as well, because there are so many instances in the past where that's not the case. Like these legendary directors whose work I love, but you have people like Hitchcock and Kubrick who like they were sometimes abusive in some ways to their cast and stuff. Yeah. And you never hear that about some of these current horror directors.
Yeah, I don't think that flies anymore. You know?
Yeah.
And also it's just counterproductive. I don't know if you feel the same way, but it's like you want somebody who knows how to communicate and get the performance out of you in a respectful way. Like if you're feeling diminished or insulted or insecure, like how is that going to get a better performance?
You know? And I mean, like there are times like where when you're on sets like that, where there is this sense of like tension and fear, and in genre, sometimes I can see how that works, but it's never like a healthy response and it never creates an environment where you're passionate about the project. It creates this kind of like tension and resentment in general, and that makes it harder to create community going forward, which a lot of the directors you've worked with, Mike and now it seems like Francis, they pull from other projects they've worked on and other teams they've worked on and create this kind of ensemble.
And you know, if you want to work with a director again, and I think that's what's really interesting, if you get to work with a director multiple times, like they know what you're capable of, they know how you like to work, and then you can kind of find like that new performance together. I feel like if you're like worried or scared about working with someone or dreading it, like it's just not going to work out.
Was it nerve-wracking for, well, I mean, this was earlier on, so maybe not, but coming into someone like Mike Flanagan, who has this like notorious ensemble, is it nerve-wracking? We talk about fears a lot on this show. Is it scary to jump into that because everybody kind of already knows each other?
Well, he does such a great job of welcoming everybody in, and he like has this, he does this thing like where the actors will come in with him and his DP, and you'll block it out, you'll work out the scene, and then he'll invite the entire crew to talk about the scene. So the crew knows like the emotional beats and the actors know the technical beats. So it's kind of like everybody's on the same page and everyone is part of the process, because, you know, actors are just a small part of it. Like it's a big orchestra and every department is just as important. So like when everybody gets to feel like you're working together, like he just really creates that environment for everyone, including newcomers, you know, and hopefully I'll get to come back into that sometime.
Yeah, I've heard that before starting the shoot for a scene for a day, we'll gather everyone around, be like, okay, this is what the scene is about, and discuss it thoroughly with everyone, the cast and crew.
Exactly.
Everyone involved. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's really helpful.
Yeah.
What scares you in general? You've worked on some pretty, you know, with some pretty big genre icons and big genre franchises. What is the...
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that I have, like, phobias or, like, irrational things. I mean, I'm scared of, like, the things, normal things that make sense to be scared of. But one thing I would say is kind of, I get freaked out by, like, big crowds. That's, like, starting to happen more. Like,
yeah.
Just, like, when you see, like, stampedes or, like, a crush of people mm-hmm. or, like...
Oh, yeah.
Like, at soccer matches or big festivals or something like that. Or, like, there's that scene at the end of Mother, that Darren Aronofsky yeah. film, oh where, like, God. More and more people keep coming into the house, like, hordes of people, yeah. a mob. That kind of freaks me out. And then, like, conversely, like... open water, like being out in the middle of the ocean.
The ocean's yeah.
I like to swim and I like the ocean, but it's like kind of thinking about being in the middle of the ocean with like miles of water.
Yeah. yeah. Especially like at night.
Yeah.
You know? Oh
yeah.
man.
Yeah, where unknown creatures lurk. So yeah, that freaks me out.
Do you think like mermaids, like, you know, or like you know, like, because like mermaids, like in origin, are actually like demons. Like, that's like a big, like, you know, they've been like kind of like Disneyfied and also a little sexualized to mm-hmm. be like, but they're actually like lizard demons if like you look at their origin, like
yeah,
that sing and like pull you down to your depths.
Are you drawn sharks. Towards those fears, or does it repel you? Like, have you ever had an interest in like the Titanic or
yeah, I mean, I like learning about, I just, I guess I can't picture myself like, like the movie Open Water, like that's a nightmare for me. Like, I can't yeah. even, like, being stranded in the middle of the ocean.
Would you take a role if you were offered, if it were a movie? Like
I yes, I would. Okay. Yeah, I like to, like, you know, use films yeah. to, like, face my fears.
Because it'll be, like, a safe
yes.
It kind of feels
way.
Like therapy sometimes yeah. when you get to do that.
Yeah, where you get to, like, learn a skill that, like, levels you up and prepares yeah. you for. Like, I love doing stunts and working with
yes.
stunt choreographers. And I actually did get to learn how to scuba dive for, it was a commercial, but like
oh,
that
cool.
was
yeah.
interesting.
So. Oh yeah, you've done a lot of commercial work,
mm-hmm.
haven't you?
Yeah, which is, you know, a great way to like be able to do indie film while still working in the business.
Yeah.
yeah,
like sustaining it. Was it scary then to learn how to scuba dive if open water is so terrible?
A bit, yeah, but that's, you know, when you have someone who like a certified instructor, like just makes you feel more confident.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Oh, what commercial was that for?
That was for a Zune commercial, which was like a
Whoa.
Short-lived like Microsoft
Handheld.
Phone, like iPod thing.
You don't know Zune?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, man, yeah.
But it was like a whimsical kind of fun, like huge budget. I like also worked with like a kangaroo and an alpaca and then
what?
I like worked in a harness,
oh
like flying through the air.
All the same commercial
yes,
or multiple
yeah,
commercials?
Yeah, and it was
oh
like a
God.
Music video director's. Yeah, very, which really interesting. Like a lot of commercials have big directors and big budgets, so you get to
yeah.
do some cool stuff.
You said you enjoy that physical element
mm-hmm.
of your job. What did you do any sports growing up or
yes.
like was okay.
Yeah, I was an athlete like all the way. I mean, I played soccer and basketball like through high school and then I started running. So I was a
cross-country
runner and
yeah.
track, yeah.
Do you, when you're working a role out, when you're finding them, do you add physicality? Like I will go for runs and learn lines that way. That's
yeah.
how I like find it in my body.
Yeah, it's really helpful to like do something that's not yeah like you say that
yeah.
you're taking yourself out of your head. And like actually that's how I like to learn lines, is doing other things like while I'm cooking or chopping food, you know, just
yeah.
things that just get the memorization out of the way. And but then like you say, as you're building the character, the physicality is huge, you know, finding the way they walk or talk or how they, what their posture is.
Yeah.
yeah.
Did you do that with Yuma County, with her, like, you know, because she has, she's carrying this like tension and trying to, you know, show without giving too much away, especially to James who
I
has
know,
to see
please,
the movie.
I need to see it still.
but,
I'm sorry.
But they, like, she's carrying the, you know, she is the first one who gets confronted with these criminals, and she has to kind of keep this air of cool amidst this very tense situation. How did you find the layers of like tension in your body but
yeah.
also faux calmness?
Yeah, I mean, so I play Charlotte. She owns the diner. Mm-hmm. So she's like the waitress and the cook, and basically like her mom also it's her mom's diner, so like I was just thinking about her as like embodying this place. Like she's the one who has to protect her home and all the other customers in there while not letting on
yeah.
that there's dangerous criminals in the diner. So yeah, it was like kind of this like performance inside of a performance, because
yeah.
she needs to put on airs that everything's okay. So
yeah.
yeah, it was interesting. And also, you know, there, I won't give too much away, but like early on in the film, she goes through something. So I tried to change my physicality from, you know, when she arrives and it's a normal day, then something terrible happens and she like she gets injured a little bit, and then she has to pretend that she's not injured and keep it together. So
for that preparation process, are you like looking at yourself in a mirror and testing stuff out, or does it just kind of
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, well, like for scenes where there is stunt coordinators involved, like you talk about what the injury would be like or how you would feel afterwards.
Yeah.
But yes, I guess when you're working it out, you're doing it in front of a mirror or working with, you know, an acting teacher or coach.
Yeah.
So, and then with your scene partners. So
do you were talking about earlier how you're afraid of like influxes of people. Now having seen Yuma, where like the entire day is her just kind of dealing with these different crazy people coming in and out and nuances, did you feel in a way that you were kind of channeling or exploring that fear? I know it's not like a mass crowd.
The thing that freaks me out is like huge crowds, like where you could get trampled to death.
Have you been to any like music festivals or anything?
Yes, and that's the thing, is like I used to love that, and now I'm just more conscious of it, and I still go to big concerts and all that. It's more just like when you're like hemmed in and have nowhere to go, it's kind of the psychological thing about it. I still do it, but but I mean, what's interesting about Yuma is that it, not that it's a clown car, but it is like a like you're on stage, like you're stuck in this one location, and yes, more and more people come in, and it's hot, the air conditioner is broken, so there was like an atmosphere of like the pressure cooker building. Yeah,
it's just so cool. I'm also curious, like you said, like that was with House of the Devil, that was your first time being number one on a call sheet. Is there times that do you now at when you're number one, I'm always curious, like do you do something different? Do you try to bring, because I don't think a lot of people realize you're also kind of, when you're number one on the call sheet, is listed in order of billing a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times. So the person who's number one is often the lead in the film. And when you're number one, the director is the captain, but also you're kind of in terms of like the actors, you're the one that everyone is kind of focused on. Mm-hmm. And you to an extent have to it's a really fine line between like focusing on your performance, but also kind of placating to the team a little bit and keeping everybody you know, positive. Are there things that you do?
I mean, even when I'm not, I try to, you know, just be like friendly, professional, welcoming. Like, and when you are number one, like you say, you kind of set the tone. So you just want to make sure everybody feels comfortable, always welcoming people into the scenes and making sure that they feel good before the camera starts rolling on them, always being there for their coverage and, you know, being a good support for their performances.
We talked about that wonderful Barbara Crampton. I wonder if she's going to be
gracing us. I hope. I smell something delicious, maybe.
That's right. Yeah.
That wasn't your baking?
It wasn't my baking, no. Okay.
It's amazing how many guests recognize that delicious smell as Barbara.
I know. It's like cookies, in the oven.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Or something.
White flour, like gardenia, maybe some pumpkin spice.
Wow. I think that signals that she's here.
Jasmine! Oh my God, it's so good to see
nice
you.
To see you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Been listening to you guys over there, and I just wanted to talk a little bit more about The Last Stop in Yuma County, and I actually got that part because of Jocelyn, I think, in a way.
Really?
Ooh. I mean, well, no, maybe it was the casting director may have recommended me to Francis.
I heard they were thinking about you, and I said, I'm reaching out right now.
Well, that's what happened, because you texted me and you said, these people are going to offer you this part in this movie, and I'm doing this movie, and you have to be in the movie, because I'm in the movie too. Yeah. And we've been talking for years that we want to work on something together. And so I was like, okay, let me read the script. And I read the script, and I fell in love
with it. We're so lucky to have you in it. And
well, it was so fun.
You're so good in it. I love your quirky little character.
Well, I have a small part. And actually, most of the movie takes place in a diner, which you guys have been talking about. And then there is the sheriff's office where there's just myself and Michael Abbott Jr. and then Connor Paolo as his deputy and myself. I'm the secretary and I have this wig and these glasses. And I said to Frances, so Frances actually wrote me more dialogue when I was going to do the part. I was like the last person to be cast, I think. And David Guglielmo, who had cast me in a lot of things I've worked with before, I was the casting director on it. He did an amazing job. But he said, oh, I got to give you a little more to do because you're Barbara, you know?
Yeah, we have you here. You have to be more in this movie.
So he gave me more to do, but I said, well, if I'm going to do this part, I said, I don't want to be myself.
Yeah.
If I'm going to do this smaller role, which now I'm getting a lot of cameo roles, people are offering me stuff, and I'm like, yeah, this is my character actress phase. As I get older, I'm just going to do these character actresses kind of things, you know, these small, fun, quirky parts. I said, I want to wear a wig. And I want to wear glasses. And, you know, I kind of had the inkling that there might be a little bit of this. It's not Southern because it's Arizona, but it's like, I don't know, just down home kind of talking. And so I kind of did that. And, just went with one of the makeup artists and found a wig and glasses, and we just put the whole thing together. And I was really happy with it.
Yeah.
I was really happy with it.
But I actually looked up, I was like, is there an accent from Yuma when I was thinking about it? Yeah. And Linda Carter, Superwoman, she's from there. So I was like, oh, she has a little bit of a twang.
Oh.
So
it's twang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little slower. It's a little twang.
And you know, really, I worked with Michael and Connor, and I was just, you know, I mean, I met them on the day. I was like, what are they doing? Okay, I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. And so they
have
lived
a really funny
universe.
Rapport, the two of them. So Charlotte is married to the sheriff. Mm-hmm. That's like another part
Michael
of the
Abbott
backstory.
Jr.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Michael and Connor are so funny
so
together.
Cute.
Yeah,
yes.
Like Connor is like this like puppy dog trying to like be the, you know, he looks up to the sheriff, wants to be like him, and is trying
like
really
Barney
hard.
Fife, yeah.
Why don't you ever tell me I'm doing a good job over? I thought that was so cute.
That was so cute. But, you know, you guys were talking about how it's very Tarantino-esque, but I also want to say that when I was on the set, I mean, the care in every moment from the DP Mac
Fiskin,
and Frances in every single moment. Like sometimes you get on set and you're directed by people, and then sometimes, you know, they kind of let you do what you're going to do, and then you talk about it a little bit, and then, all right, just do another take. Moment by moment, Frances was right with me, and I want to ask you too, you know, with everything that I said, well, you know, give me more of this or do this, or I really like that moment, so go there, or maybe when you're picking up this thing, can you do it in this line? And he was very specific with me, and I loved it because I thought everything he said was good, you know?
Same. And, yeah, he was very present, and when you're on a set, it's chaotic, and the director has to make so many decisions, but it's true. Like, in every, like, just talking about performance, he was so dialed in and always dedicated to making it better, and, like, you only have between action and cut to get this for the movie that's gonna, you know, be forever. So he was just always dialed in, present, and had great ideas, and just, very caring, respectful, collaborative. Yeah. And you learn, you know, a lot about somebody and their communication style, and he was really a good one.
It's interesting working with different directors, too, because you kind of do have to go with whatever style the director has.
Yeah.
You know, it's their movie, so however they're going to talk to you. I mean, I'm not the star of the set, you know, as an actor. The director is the star of the set, and he or she is dictating what is happening and what's going on and how we're going to move the day. And, you know, it was really wonderful working with him. Yeah. I just felt like he was just so giving and so, like you say, present.
Yeah, he's a good one. And also him and Mac had worked together a lot before, so that always really matters.
Oh, I didn't
the relationship
know that.
Between
on commercials and stuff.
On shorts and music videos.
Okay.
But like when they have a good rapport and when there's good energy and it's calm behind the camera, that really, you know, helps us as well.
And the way that they funded this, and sometimes we talk about, you know, how we're going to make movies in this darn Hollywood's
economy.
You know, economy that we're in, yeah.
Darn place.
But one of the producers, James, you know, really believed in the project and really believed in Frances and the script, and he sold his house.
Oh, wow.
To fund the movie.
Yeah, we're so grateful to James Clayes. Yeah, he made this whole thing happen, and he and Frances were good friends before this, and he really believed in Frances and knew that he had something special and went all in for Yuma County, and he's a really good guy. And they have a funny, really, they're like the odd couple as well. Like, he's, you know, they're very funny together, and they actually made a documentary while we were shooting.
Yes.
Oh, so,
about the making of.
You guys will get to see the behind the scenes of everything between them and the whole production and pre-production and afterwards. So.
Yeah. This is also why you need to see these films in theaters, because this is how scrappy we're getting right now to make films. Like, we're selling our homes. Right. Please go see the movie.
I know. This guy's selling his home. And, you know, he's not going to make this money back right away. I mean.
But he's doing it because he believes in you guys and the work. So, like, go see it. Yes, please.
Well, I'm
sure. For the love of God.
Well, let me just say this. And I know it hasn't been said publicly yet, but Frances just got a big job. From working on this movie.
Oh, cool.
A huge job.
Yeah.
Because this, The Last Stop in Yuma County, watch it in theaters at Alamo Drafthouse May 10th.
Yes.
It will also be online, and you can rent it online. But yes, go to the theaters, as Catherine is telling us. But because this movie is so, what would you say? Like, you just say it is assured. It's an assured debut. Like, it's one of the best first movies I've ever seen.
It really is. It's so dynamic, and it's so funny. We haven't really talked about that.
It's funny.
It's many things. It's violent. Yeah. It's good looking. There's a lot of dark humor, and it's really fun to see with a crowd.
Do you guys know how they came up with like the concept for the film? Maybe we have to have Frances.
I mean, I think there was a lot of Frances loves Hitchcock, and I know he loves Rope, which was like all set in one room and like very tense. And it's also, there's this other movie, actually I don't think he knew about it going into it, but David Guglielmo told us about it, and I watched it going in, called The Petrified Forest, which is a similar conceit, like people stuck on a roadside, and there's criminals and they're held hostage. But I think he just loved the idea of, and also he was being smart about how to make his first independent film, one location, just like get a bunch of great actors and make something with a with a great script and a great DP. So he really nailed it and like knew like what he could do with what he had, and he really came through.
Yeah. And my buddy Richard Brake is in it.
He's so good. He's so scary.
He's so scary. On another episode, I was talking about how I met Jeff Daniel Phillips and Richard Brake at a convention. I became like fast friends with them. Yeah. And
I love their friendship. It's so inspiring.
They're really good friends and have such a cute friendship. I went out to dinner with them the last time that Richard was in town, and it was, we just had a lovely time.
Yeah.
Just love those guys. But anyway, Frances got a huge job, I just want to say.
Oh, yes. Nice.
It will be announced.
Stay tuned.
We'll have him on, and maybe by the time we have him on, he can talk about it. We hope.
Yes. Yes, I talked to him. They are going today to another film festival in Calgary while we're filming
this
with
Jocelyn. I've actually heard there's like a really good, I was up in Calgary for a convention, but I've heard like the film community in Calgary is actually like really, really strong. There's a couple festivals that happen there.
There's a couple of guys up there that I know too that make movies up there. It's not, I went to a convention up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, there's a lot of land up there.
Yeah. The mountains. They took us on a tour. Yeah. It was really pretty.
Right.
Very cinematic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm
so happy. Yuma County, May 10th.
We
work
together,
so happy
and just, you know, hope we get some scenes together soon.
Let's make it happen somehow.
I know, we will.
Yes.
Yeah, we're working on stuff.
We're plotting.
Yeah. Cool.
We're going to figure this out. We're going to get you in there, too.
Yeah, tag me in.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. So now it's time to play our sidebar. And Catherine comes up with all the games that we play, and because she's amazing. And could you hand me that Skelly Sam there?
Our friend.
So the game that we're going to play with Jocelyn is a game about nightmares. So it's kind of like an improv in a way that I'm just going to start out. And I haven't thought of this beforehand. at all. I'm just going to come up on the cuff with some sort of dream scenario. And maybe Nicolas Cage will be in there too. And then we just...
Nicolas Cage is a Ruth the Curry character.
We'll just say Nicolas Cage is all, should always be in your dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. I love when he
And then
appears.
We'll just keep adding to it and adding to it. It's like if you went to the Groundlings or something, yeah. You know, you're going to add to your dream. But I want to make it kind of specific to you. And one thing that, you know, we didn't really talk about or I didn't ask you about, but I'll incorporate it into this, is that... you worked with AJ Bowen,
yeah,
and I did Your Next with him,
yeah,
in House of the Devil, and Greta Gerwig, who's like the most successful female director of all time. Oh my God! And you know, anyway, so Skelly Sam and I are gonna come up with this. You, so you have to hold Skelly Sam, okay, as you continue on with the dream, but.
Okay. James, how much do you love Factor Meals?
I love Factor Meals because I don't have time, Catherine. Time is something that...
You don't have it.
It just slips their way through my fingers every day, and I think about how much time is leaving me, and I'm like, oh, but I have to eat to sustain myself, and I don't have time to make food.
There's just too many minutes in the day. You're having an existential crisis. You're like, I don't know how I'm going to do it all.
And exactly, but I do have 2 minutes to make a Factor Meal.
To put it in the microwave, it comes pre-made, it's delicious, it's healthy, it's specified to your dietary needs.
That's right.
Big and into fitness.
I've got them, yeah. My trainer is like, hey man, you gotta stop eating all these high fat things, you gotta eat better.
And I'm like, eat the Factor Meals.
Don't worry, I got Factor.
And so it works out. So if you want to try Factor yourself, or if you're just too busy, or you forget to eat like I do, it's like a neurological thing. I feel like I don't.
You gotta remember to eat.
I know. I feel like I don't feel hunger. This is like a real thing.
Oh yeah.
I think I have a neurological imbalance where I don't feel hunger.
Oh no.
I don't know. It's like an evolutionary mechanism. But anyway, thanks to Factor Meals, I don't have to worry about that. About
right.
Accidentally killing myself from starvation. I can just use Factor. And if you want to use Factor and support the show, you can go to factormeals.com/screamdreams50 and use the code screamdreams50.
Why is it 50?
Because 50% off.
That's right.
50% off to get, or no, it's not. That's a lie.
Ha!
wait, actually, yes, it is. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. So
wow.
So it's like a double whammy.
That's
it's
right.
Like Scream Dreams 50, you get 50 and then 20. What's that? That's 70, really, when you think about
that's
it.
That's not math, but. But that first one is half off.
It is half off.
Which
so,
is great.
So if you want to support the show, head to factormeals.com/screamdreams50 and use the code screamdreams50 to get 50% off your first box and then 20% off your next box. That's code
Screamdreams50
at
Screamdreams50 factor.com.
Factor.com/screamdreams50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Don't starve to death. Get Factor Meals.
Do it.
You know what's a nightmare? Dehydration.
Yeah. You know what's an even worse nightmare? Plastic pollution.
That's why we love Liquid Death and their evil mission to murder your thirst and kill plastic pollution.
That's right. Their aluminum cans are as metal as they get. So pick some up today because we all need something refreshing to reach for when we wake up from a nightmare.
It's true. Cheers.
In this dream, Jocelyn is walking down this late night, I want to say late night with the devil, yeah. But no, I'm not going to say that. I got movies on the brain. She's walking.
We're going off the rails. Very, yes, interview today.
Very, very, well, anyway, it's a good time for the movies. Late Night with the Devil, Last Stop in Ewing County, and The First Omen,
right? Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, Jocelyn is walking down the street late at night, and Nicolas Cage is not far behind. And she sees a house kind of in the distance. And she realizes that she's cold and she's hungry. And she thought she had a car, but she doesn't know where the car is anymore. So she decides that she should go to that house and knock on the door and see if there's any food or if there's any maybe fire burning. Nicolas Cage is following along.
I forgot about
that. But she actually doesn't know that Nicolas Cage is following along. She doesn't know Nicolas Cage. She also doesn't know him. But he knows her and wants to follow her. So Jocelyn knocks on the door, and Nicolas Cage is sort of waiting, you know, outside the door. And he's waiting to see what's going to happen when Jocelyn knocks on the door.
Okay. So I've just knocked on the door. There's no answer. I try the doorknob, and the doorknob is freezing cold, which is surprising. I use my shirt to, because it's so freezing that it's painful, to open the door. Push the door open, and feels like a vacuum inside. There's just no feeling, no air, no sound. I step inside, across the threshold, and what I don't realize is that before the door shuts behind me, I don't shut the door, but before I shut the door, Nicolas Cage has turned into a crow, and the crow has also flown into the house, and the crow is now following behind me. I start walking down the first hallway. There's no light. There's no candles. I walk into the kitchen, and there's just the first thing I see is just scraps of disgusting food everywhere.
And for a chef, that must be disconcerting.
It's repulsive. Yeah. I'm starving, and there's nothing to eat. So I continue on down to the next room. The next room is the living room. It's completely empty, completely silent, but all of a sudden I hear some noises coming from the basement. Cool. So I decide to explore.
Oh. And you go to the basement. I don't know why we're listening to Skelly this time, but we are.
Skelly's giving you
through osmosis. And you open the door to the basement, and it's so hot. It's like it's sweltering, and but you know that you have to go down there, because what other choice do you have? And Nicolas Cage, the crow, flies past you as if he knows what's down there, and he turns around at the bottom of the steps and goes, "Caw, caw, I'm Nicolas Cage. You must follow me if you want to live." And so you go, "Okay, Nicolas Cage," and you follow him. You follow him into the basement, where you see a fire burning, but it's growing larger and larger. And Nicolas Cage says, "It's okay, gaw gaw, it's okay. You can touch the flames." So you reach out to touch the flames, but first you ask Nicolas Cage, "I'm really hungry, though. Do you have a granola bar?"
Nicolas Cage, the crow, says, "Caw, caw, what do you think is burning?" And you realize that the fire is all good food and all good ingredients. And apparently Nicolas Cage, the crow, only wants to eat that garbage upstairs, that trash.
Like crows do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, picked apart bones and, like, I don't know, fruit casserole, just like really bad stuff, while in the fire are like prime rib and fresh produce. Nicolas Cage says, "I actually go to farmers markets and buy them out and bring them back here just to fuel this fire." And
caw caw
caw caw. Yeah. I can't do the high voice, but so because he told you that the fire is safe, you reach into it and you start pulling out these ingredients so that you can make yourself something. But every time you pull something out, it just instantly turns to ash in your hands. And Nicolas Cage, the crow, starts laughing at you and saying, "You will never eat good food in this house."
Caw, caw.
Nightmare.
And then all of a sudden, AJ Bowen comes down the stairs and he says, "Follow me if you want to eat." And he brings you back upstairs to another room way up at the top, where they've been curing pastrami, and you delight in this pastrami. But what A.J. Bowen doesn't tell you is that it's his friend, Greta Gerwig, and she's been strung up, and she's the pastrami.
Ooh. Oh, my
so
God.
Jesus, you've been eating this Barbie-esque meat of Greta Gerwig. And then you're like, it's getting to be morning. Now I'm full, and I've had enough to eat. And A.J. Bowen says, but would you like to stay for a while? And also, you can wake up anytime, so okay. Anybody can say they can wake up. So you could do it if you want to, or one of us. But anyway.
You're ready to wake up.
But I just want to say that, you know, A.J. Bowen wants you to stay for a while, and I'm not sure what he wants you to do. But
you know, a cannibal.
Maybe you know.
A Barbie cannibal.
Yeah.
Okay, I think A.J. is like, it's breakfast time. You haven't eaten anything. So.
Well, what about the pastrami?
The pastrami, right.
The Barbie pastrami.
Barbie.
Hmm. You ate Greta.
But he wants you to stay, because what does he want to do with you?
He wants to cook. We already cooked. he wants to, all the delicious Greta Gerwig that we have eaten has fueled our creative, so we are now full up on amazing ideas. Ooh. And now AJ wants to write a movie together.
Oh my God.
For the next dream scenario, we'll be writing a movie about disgusting food and crows and Nicolas Cage and Victorian homes.
It's called Cannibal Dream House.
It's called Cannibal Dream House.
Yeah, and, Cannibal Dream House.
Yes.
Yeah. House of the Cannibal Dream House.
House of the Cannibal Dream House. And then we wake up and we start writing the movie together. Is that how this, or should I?
Yeah,
we're still awake. Or,
yeah, now you're awake.
Now we're awake.
Now you're awake, and it just becomes a box office hit.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's.
And a promise to all our viewers that movie's going to happen.
Yes.
So, sorry.
Yeah. You sorry. Now you, we didn't tell you, but now you have a studio deal with Amp Films to make Cannibal Dream House.
Yeah. Cannibal Dream House.
I want to say one thing about what we're doing right now. Which this reminded me of something. And this is probably a good thing for filmmakers. Jed Shepard and Rob Savage from the movie The Host. You know, they are really good friends, and they did this thing where they would text each other a movie idea every day.
Wow.
So everybody, you know, they both had to do it to each other. I'm texting you an idea, and then I'm texting you an idea, and the next day they just forced themselves to do it. And so at the end of a year, they had, you know, 600 or something movie ideas. And so I don't know if The Host was made for that. I think maybe it was, but that's how they were creating, like, different things that they would do together. They would just, you know, force yourself to come up with some freaking idea.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we're doing.
Right.
You know,
we had Spencer Charnas on before, and last night we were all at a premiere together, James, Chelsea, Spencer, and I. And Spencer and I do that all the time. We came up with one yesterday. It was Walking Dad. Were you there when we did that?
I wasn't there for Walking Dad.
Walking
Dad. About a zombie father.
Yes. Right. Spencer's.
I love any pun concept. I love puns.
We
I was going to make a House of the Deviled Eggs joke in there because of breakfast. But,
There you go.
But then we had already eaten the Greta pastrami. Yeah.
House of the Deviled Eggs.
Yeah. I just want to eat her up.
That's the
Greta Gerwig. Anyway, on that note, I got to go. I'll see you guys later.
Boom. Gone.
Just missed her already.
So many delicious cookies.
We could just eat her up.
Devour it.
I think it's really interesting that you're so brave in tackling all of these kind of themes in your work. We on this show always ask people what their nightlight is. And what we mean by that is amidst like all the dark, horrible, cringy things in the world, when you wake up from the nightmare, what is the thing, metaphorical or otherwise, that keeps you going, keeps you
like literally when you wake up from a nightmare, or
just day-to-day life, keeps you going in life,
the metaphorical nightmare that is humanity, right. You know,
existence. I mean, I love to cook, so like that, like just things that are routines and like habits that are their own reward, like cooking, reading, walking. I walk a lot. Gardening.
Simple pleasures.
Yeah, simple pleasures. Watching Jeopardy every night. Reruns of Frasier.
And I feel like it's so, and maybe it's easier for us since we're not younger right now, but I feel like it's so important for people to find those things and not feel the need to turn them into content, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, oh, you like cooking? Oh, have you ever thought of, like, doing, like, a cooking YouTube channel?
I know.
It's like, no.
I've had these conversations with myself many times, or like, even, you know, a food business or something like that, and then you're right. There's a risk of, like, turning your beloved hobby into a business.
Yeah.
Yeah, just taking all the joy out of it.
Yeah. But I was just going to say also, when you're asking about like what saves you from the nightmare, like that's really one of the perks, one of the many things like that's great about like having a husband or a partner, like waking up, like someone who can wake you up from the nightmare. It's huge.
Yeah. You know? Or just like community. Like, I mean, that's how like
friends,
you and I met
family.
And we talk about this on the show all the time, like the community that Barbara fosters. Mm-hmm. That's just so invaluable for us as creatives in general. But I think particularly as women in this business, like, you know, we talked about Bria, we talked about Rocky, like the support system that we all have for each other is so,
it's so true. Like, yeah, Barbara's the best for that. She's just so generous with her knowledge and experience and her community and bringing people together. It means a lot.
Yeah, it makes all the difference. Well, thank you for being part of our nightmare community.
Thank you.
Thank you to everyone who tuned in. We are so grateful that you are part of our dreamer community. If you have more things you'd like us to talk about on this show, please write in and let us know. Where and when can people watch Last Stop in Yuma County, and what's next for you?
Yeah, May 10th, Yuma County comes out in select theaters and VOD, so they can watch it there, and later this year in streaming. And then there's a few things percolating that haven't been announced officially, so I'll keep you guys posted.
If they want to be kept posted, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram at my name, Jocelyn Donahue. Yeah.
did you once have a Twitter and get rid of it, or did you never have it?
I still have it. I'm not using it so much anymore.
I feel like
so
many people have gone that route.
Yeah,
of, like, no, they don't use it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I miss like conversation. Like, there was like a, you know, great filmmaker, like community conversation happening there, and I don't think it's on Threads yet. I don't know. How are you guys using that?
Or I still use it just because, again, like you said, there's so many filmmakers, and I feel like some random opportunities come my way through Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm also I feel like I take awful pictures, so I'm not that active on Instagram. But it definitely feels like a deserted town now, and it sucks because there wasn't one place that everyone moved to between Threads or Blue Sky or all these other apps. It kind of like dispersed. That was it was an invite only app for a while. Now I think it's open, but like it was like I think that really hurt it, because it came out right as like the Twitter to X thing was happening, but because it was invite only, not everyone could get involved in it. So. Mm-hmm.
Letterboxd is fun for film communities.
So. I don't like the Letterboxd.
How come?
Because they're not so nice there.
Oh
dear.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's like the don't read the comments, but it's all the comments.
I feel like Letterboxd, I was into the idea of it, and then I realized that so many of the reviews are just like trying to be the best jokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, oh, what do people think of this movie? And it's just all the top reviews are just like one sentence that's like really funny and
the
clever.
Hot
I'm
take.
Like, no, I actually want to read. Okay, that's fine. But
I guess I just like it more like I like Pinterest. Like I'm not really interacting with people. I just like it for myself to like save my favorite things.
Yeah,
I'll look on Letterboxd, but I can't look up anything that I've worked on or anything that's
probably
like
dangerous.
I'm really attached to.
Yeah.
I just it's a lot.
Do you really reviews of your stuff?
Yes, you want to see like how it's, you know, how people are receiving like what you made. You try not to. You have to take with the good with the bad. If you know, so.
It's rough.
Because
the bad always
another
sticks
muscle
in
to make stronger is to, you know, just focus on like what you want to do and what makes your friends and your community proud, like versus, you know.
Yeah.
People trying to do the hot take.
What makes you proud right now? What's something that you wish more people knew about you?
About me, not movies?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like I say, I love to cook, and that's something I do. Like, I love to cook and bake for friends and family. Uh-huh. Like, that's one of my nightlights is doing that. So maybe someday I'll be baking and sharing with the wider public.
We'll but see. You don't have to.
I don't have to.
It's Thank just
you.
For yes. you. Yeah. It's just for you and those of us who get to bask yes. in your presence.
Thank you.
Thank you for being part of us. Please, please, if you're watching, go see Last Stop in Yuma County in theaters. Mm-hmm. Go see these movies in theaters. It makes a difference. It truly allows us to create more movies. It's such an important thing. These numbers matter. It's the only way we can actually see tangible numbers about
and
our work.
Make sure you subscribe to Scream Dreams and yeah. watch it, because those numbers matter too.
They
and
do.
It's the only reason that we're able to make more of those. So do that.
Yeah, support please us there. Like, subscribe, ring the bell.
There you go.
Nice.
You got it.
And write in and tell us. You don't have to be nice, but it would be nice if you were nice about what you like about the show, or if you want more, or if you have more questions for us, or want to see wonderful people like Jocelyn back. We're at Scream Dreams Pod. Subscribe to the Patreon. Do the things. I think that's it. Thank yeah. you.
I'm going to go say some nice things about you.
Oh, thank you.
So yeah, in person.
I'll sign up on Letterboxd just to say nice things about
right
you.
Right back at you, Catherine.
Until next time, I'm Catherine Corcoran.
I'm James A. Janisse. Be sure to leave the light on.